you to leave, cause I know exactly where it leads, but I watch us go round and round each time. You got that jeans.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's WMFO Medford, 9:01. Coming up on 9:02 in the morning on, what is today? Saturday, November 18th. Yeah, you thought I turned your mic on, huh? You know, I have the power and I didn't do it, but well, I did now.
That's just like you.
Yeah, who are you?
I don't know. Who am I? Why am I here?
Mark Herr.
It's too early. It's always too early.
Bye, you guys. Bye. Sounded awesome.
Bye. All right. Great show.
See you after Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much.
Good luck.
All right. Hi, Les.
Hello, Mike.
Yeah. So it's me and Les and Mark today, and kind of a condensed schedule in the first hour because we have a really great, another local artist here, Rachel Marie, a local folk artist, will be here at 10 a.m., and we're going to talk to her, and she's going to play a bunch of stuff live, and you know the drill. So much talent around here, and I'm very fortunate to be able to help them to promote themselves here at WMFO. So today, here at 9 a.m., Mark and I and Les are going to start off with about a 20-minute first set. And Les is going to come in right around 20 past, 25 past.
I'll talk a little faster and have them play a little faster, too.
Will you?
Get it in there.
Will you? Yeah, okay. All right, he'll get it in there. And you're going to talk about the five most influential women of the past century?
Arguably the most powerful women musicians we've known in the last 100 years.
Who actually is arguing about it?
Well, again, you know, any issue deals with argumentation. And no argument is ever won or lost, so I feel pretty safe.
All right, cool. And Mark, are you going to help with the music today? And also,
I guess I'll be the producer today. You know, I'm going to help when my father's doing his thing.
Okay.
So also,
I know you want to talk about the state of Boston radio.
Yeah, it's been a tough week. It's not just Boston, too. I mean, it's definitely other cities. But you know, last night, several stations in Boston were spun off. And
it took effect last night.
They kind of
right?
sort of went their own ways. It did. And it's already affecting things. You know, TuneIn Radio, You cannot get WBZ right now, which is really disturbing. It's like, you know.
Well, they're an iHeart station.
Yeah, so it probably might not be on TuneIn anymore.
Yeah, right.
But I know that people out there, the full-timers in radio, are nervous. They were all posting on Facebook last night. And I'm a little nervous, too. I mean, I do the gigs, I do the segments on WBZ, and I don't know if that's going to keep happening. Mm-hmm. But for the full-timers, it's seriously a really scary time. So hopefully this all gets worked out. I think it will. I hope it will. But we don't know right now. So
yeah, it injects a lot of doubt into career radio professionals when a sale like this happens, because they don't necessarily know if they still have their jobs or if their job is going to change and be somewhere else. They don't know.
And yet they have to be on their game. They still have to go out and report stories.
Uh-huh.
And this is in the back of their mind the whole time. And it's really difficult. So all I can say is thank God for college radio, which is, you know, not just stable, but it seems to be thriving a little bit.
Yeah,
you can always depend on the left of the dial stations.
Yeah, well, we're kind of here to fill in the gap.
Yeah.
And sort of do what we loved from the time growing up with commercial radio, what it used to be.
Exactly. Yeah. And one prediction, I mean, we already see some old-timers, some veterans come into college radio. I think you might see a little more of that over the coming months and years.
Think so. Well, you know, we've got plenty of room here at WMFO, and we'll welcome them with open arms.
Definitely.
And open turntables and open microphones. And
maybe food. Well, no, there's no food
allowed.
There's
no food allowed in here. No. The longer you stay here, the hungrier you get, because you can't eat.
So.
All right, so let's get going. I want to start with a little bit of new noise today. Something new from U2. They've got a new album coming out. It's going to be called American Experience. And it's pretty anti-Trump. You know, it's got a strong message.
It's also very personal. I guess each song is personal in its own way, whether it's, you know, family, friends, politics. And the first song, which I think you're playing, the first song from the album?
American Soul, I'm not sure. If that's the first one.
I think it is. But I'm starting to really like this now. It's taken a little while, but I'm starting to like it a lot. So
yeah, and this one features a guest in Kendrick Lamar, who raps at the beginning of it. And actually, Kendrick appears on U2's record as well.
Right.
Well, no, that's what I'm talking about. This is U2's, I mean, the other way around, Bono's lyrics are in play also on Kendrick's album.
Exactly.
So I did a little bit of a switch and a little bit of a collab there with lyrics as well.
Yeah.
So you hear this right at the beginning, brand new noise from U2 here at WMFO Medford.
Against are the bullies, for one day they will have to stand up to themselves. Blessed are the liars, for the truth can be awkward. It's not a place.
Bless your soul for love. Thank you. mercy on my ears, will you?
WAMFO 9:26 in the morning. Tux Freeform Radio. How you doing? Mike on the mic, along with Mark and Les Hurwitz. Hello, guys.
Hello. Good morning.
Hello. And that one went out to all of our
radio friends
out there, obviously, who are nervous today about what's going on.
Yeah. Yep. I noticed when I was listening to BZ on the way in, they had a little spot that said, an iHeart radio station.
Yeah, they had to change it all up.
Yeah, quick, so, too.
Yeah, and the sad thing is a lot of these stations, they were all friends. They were all in the same building, I believe, and now they're all scattering. I think ZLX and BZ are together, but 98.5 is with another company, and then the 103.3 and 104.1, they're going their own way, too. So.
Yeah, and who knows if the new owner is going to change the format or anything?
Nobody knows. And you know what? A troublesome, disturbing day just got worse.
Yeah,
with the death of Malcolm Young from AC/DC. Mm-hmm. Just got word, and arguably maybe the greatest rhythm guitarist of all time, if not top three. And boy, he was a great one. He was one of the founders of AC/DC. He and his brother Angus, who everyone knows Angus, you know, his crazy guitar playing, but. You know, Malcolm was, in my opinion, he was kind of the leader of the band, and his rhythm guitar, you just don't hear anything like that. You never do. So he was a legend. And he
rest
was too young.
Peace.
64
rest in peace.
Years old.
Yeah.
Dementia, horrible disease.
Yeah, it's awful. All right, everybody, let's tell you what we played, and then we're going to get to our friend Les. Started off that set with New U2. I like that because it rhymes.
It does.
That was American Soul. Joe Bonamassa from 2013's Different Shades of Blue CD. That was So What Would I Do? Awesome. Cheryl Flynn Kearns requested that without even knowing she did it.
Really?
But she did. Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. The Replacements from 2008's Tim CD. There's a lot of different versions of that song, Can't Hardly Wait. They call that an outtake because it's kind of electric and much more passionate than the usual one that I play. There's a bunch of versions of that one, but that's the Tim version, which is kind of famous in folklore for that version. Love it. Rolling Stones, a lot of fans of Monkees out there, I saw. Monkees are big fans of you too. 1969, Let It Bleed album was that one, Monkey Man. And Elvis Costello, 1978's This Year's Model was Radio Radio, and Mark explained why we played that.
Yes, indeed. And I think, I don't know if you're going to the radio brunch next month, but I'm probably going to be
going. I don't think I'm
going to
be here.
Oh, you won't? Okay. So there's a radio brunch that, thanks to Gina Tempesta, who is on WBZ, she's setting it up. And
yeah, I miss Gina.
A lot of people be hugging each other for that brunch.
Yeah, if I'm here, I mean, I'll definitely go. I had a great time last time.
It was fun. It was so much fun. And again, thanks, Gina, for setting this up. It's a great time.
All right, it's time for our favorite musicologist. What are you going to say, Les?
Well, favorite because I'm the only musicologist.
Okay, get that out.
No partiality here.
Still number one.
Number one.
I'm number
followed
one.
By no one. Okay.
Okay, so you're gonna talk about five of the most influential female artists in the last century?
Yeah, essentially the most influential is a pretty good word. I would take that into
sometimes
consideration. The power of these people. I consider the five that I'm choosing, five of the most powerful women performers of the last century, both pop and classical, actually. We're going to hear both sides. And the first one, I'm going to get into this rather quickly because I know Mike has a very busy morning this morning, and therefore I'm not number one. I'm only 0.5. Okay. The first performer you're going to hear is one who is still with us. She was born in 1941. Her name is Martha Argerich, A-R-G-E-R-I-C-H, an Argentinian pianist, who many today consider her the top great woman artist for the piano. And she has a mammoth technique. The piece you're going to hear is done. It was done during her 60s. And I believe this is a live performance, as I recall. So listen carefully to the reaction after the performance. It's a piece by a composer who was born, and by the way, 1685 must have been a good year. There must have been, maybe the water was good that year. Bach was born, Handel, of course, the Messiah, you know, hallelujah. And this man, Domenico Scarlatti, S-C-A-R-L-A-T-T-I, from the Italian school. And he started out in the footsteps of his father, who was one of the first of Italian opera. Alessandro was his father. Now, Domenico followed his dad by writing opera until he got a calling. Let's examine the keyboard. Of course, the keyboard at that time, beside the organ, was the harpsichord, the direct predecessor to the piano. And I consider the harpsichord the world's largest guitar. When you think about it, even though it looks like what a piano becomes from the outside, each note, when it is struck, is plucked. It's not struck on the string, but plucked by a feather quill. So in a sense, it's a guitar. And Scarlatti got to writing, especially after age 40, a series of what he called exercises. We call them sonatas today. We know that he wrote over 400 of these. And what he did was investigate the technical possibilities which engendered the possibilities in terms of spiritual contact as a composer in the writing for, by way of investigation, the harpsichord. These pieces fit the piano perfectly, even though many, or if not most of these pieces were written before the piano came into being in 1711. This sonata delves into a particular technique that replicates the guitar. Scarlatti was a very good guitarist, and he understood the guitar very well. Now, in this piece, he replicates the plucking motion that we hear coming out of the guitar. On the piano, it's extremely difficult because you have to come up and down on the same note in order to get a plectrum sound. And what is the involvement in this is the four fingers, not the fifth. The thumb is sort of a stable influence. It doesn't play so much on this in this piece. But the second, third, fourth and fifth fingers, in incredible rapid succession, play the same note and then go to other notes at the rate of I tried to as accurately get this at the rate of about six notes every half seconds. Listen to this incredibly difficult piece by Martha Argerich. Rachmaninoff is next, and the performer of two pieces, one of which you will hear now, was a pianist born here in Brooklyn, and she died in New York. Her name, Constance Keane, K-E-E-N-E. Absolutely incredible pianist. She chose, during mid-career, to teach rather than play. And she spent many years at the Manhattan School of Music as one of the great teachers of the latter part of the 20th century. Her pianism is absolutely unbelievable. She was a mere slip of a woman. When you listen, you ask, how can a woman play music like this? Remember, much of the music we hear prior to the 20th century is for what? An all-male world. I mean, most of the great performers were men. Most of the great composers were men. Most of the great players in the orchestra were men. So listen to this woman who defies tradition, and listen to this prelude by Rachmaninoff. This particular prelude, listen to the improbables in the piano unless you really know it. Why is the piano a kind of portable orchestra, as it were? You're going to hear, and listen carefully, because you'll hear all three factors. Melody. Then you're going to hear accompaniment with swirls around the melody at a different dynamic level. Remember, this has to be softer than the melody so that the melody can be heard. Plus another melody as it goes along. So it's truly orchestral in totality by way of the amount of sound you hear. Listen to Constance Keane play this Rachmaninoff prelude.
Thank you.
I should tell you a little bit more about Constance Keane. This recording was made in 1964. She did all of the preludes of Rachmaninoff, two opus numbers, 23 and 32. By the word opus, those of you who have seen the word, some of you may not know what the word means. Opus is Latin for work, meaning project. So, say Beethoven's opus 79 means it's the 79th project that he underwent that's published in chronological order. That's pretty much the situation. Rachmaninoff himself was one of the great pianists of the 20th century, 19th and 20th centuries, and he wrote for his own mammoth technique. I mean, these pieces are incredibly difficult, so commanding. Only to the top pianist can really do justice to them. Just to give you an idea of how great a pianist she was considered, Horowitz mentioned her as the only, she was the only woman pianist he ever openly admired. And said so. Arthur Rubinstein, one of the top three or four pianists of his time, said upon hearing this recording of all of the preludes, which included the one you just heard, stated, and these are his words, he said, "It is incredibly difficult to understand how any of these pieces can be played better than this woman, including these pieces played by the composer himself." And that is quite a compliment. When Horowitz played for Jimmy Carter in the Rose Room at the White House in 1975, he was told by Carter, "Invite someone you'd like besides your wife." And he did, and he invited Constance Keane. She was the only woman in that 75-chair audience who was invited by Horowitz himself. Listen to her play again. This is number 5 in Opus 23, the G minor prelude played by Constance Keane. And there you are. She was an incredible pianist and one of the great American musicians. Now we're going to go to pop, and we're going to hear what I call it for us. Dame, she's still with us, she's 91 years old, Dame Cleo Lane from England. She had one of the most powerful forces called a voice that we've ever heard in pop singing. And she was also an opera singer. And you're going to hear two pieces fused one after the other. The first piece will be a kind of fun duet with Galway, the great flutist. Listen to the scat singing she does with the flute and the duet appearing with both of them. It's just incredible. The second part, without interruption, will be the Duke Ellington. He didn't write it, but one of his sax players wrote it, and that is It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing of Duke Ellington. And the scat singing in this. Listen to what you hear in the voice. No words, only scat singing, a vowel being used, making the voice a pure instrument, just another instrument in the orchestra. Let's listen.
Majesty, low hear the gentle address. From his moist cabinet, mounts up on
that. Talk about fun. Did this woman have fun or not? Just unbelievable. Listening to this voice becoming a pure instrument. We're going to hear the same technique in classical in a little while, but let's hear Dame Cleo Lane one more time doing the great tune Perdido. This is an arrangement by her husband John Dankworth, And he plays sax, and she scat sings with him. Listen.
I look for my hottest burrito, lost him down in Toledo, the day that the Easter started. Bolero, spade as a blade of bolero, kissed me with a distinct sombrero, and that's when my heart departed. High was the moon when I held him close, low was the sun when we said, adios, burrito, my heart is burrito. No one's to find what I lost, Perdido. Perdido, my heart is Perdido. Lost it in Toledo when fiesta started. Bolero, bolero, kissed the sombrero when my heart departed. I was the moon when I held him close.
Each performance, Cleolena, is a celebration. It's not just a performance. Notice that the instrument, the voice, becomes a pure instrument. There are no words. It becomes an addendum to the total sound. She is right there, note for note, with the sax player or the flute player or the Muppets. You just heard the Muppets on the drums, that sort of thing. She was unbelievable. Now, I'm going to take you to the classical using the same technique. Rachmaninoff, in 1914... wrote a series of songs, the last of which is called Vocal, V-O-C-A-L, Vocalise, I-S-E. That traditionally is an exercise for the voice without using words to create pitch, balance, and dynamic balance to strengthen the voice. He took the word, he wrote a melody without any words. He assigns the soprano to use any of the vowel sounds, A, E, I, over U. He uses she, this woman, we're going to talk about her in a minute, uses the short A out of A, ah. And she sings these notes, making it again, not scat singing, but a parallel to what Cleo Lane did. You're going to hear nothing but a voice. It becomes an intrinsic part of the instrumental balance. This is an arrangement for orchestra and soprano sung by one of the great singers from America, born here in Philly, Anna, A-N-N-A, M-O-F-F-O, Muffo. And listen to, we're going to hear part of it. It's a long one, so we're going to fade out on this. But I want you to hear a world of absolute and sheer human beauty. Listen.
Thank you.
There is more to it, but I just wanted you to hear the same kind of the application, which comes, of course, long before Cleo Lane. And this probably starts with Beethoven's time when he wrote his final symphony, the Ode to Joy, the chorus in the last movement. Singers just didn't understand what Beethoven was doing. He was so far ahead of his time. And he looked at these women and he said, look, sing in tune, you become pure instruments, listen to what I'm doing. This is where it started. Now, the final piece you're going to hear is by this great pianist today. She's 31 years old. She is absolutely the terror on the keyboard. Her name is Yuja, Y-U-J-A. I've had her on before, Yuja Wang, W-A-N-G. By the way, before I forget, she's going to appear in Boston, Jordan Hall, New England Conservatory of Music, May the 11th. Listen to her play a piece by Strauss, one of the Strauss composers out of Vienna, you know, the Strauss waltzes and all that sort of thing. This is called a polka, P-O-L-K-A, you know, a